Maybe that's what we're looking at.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 940A exempts glass container manufacturers from recycled glass requirements under the specified circumstances. It requires that glass containers manufactured in Oregon or within 750 miles of Oregon borders to meet Oregon's minimum recycled glass content requirement. It changes the date for the increase in minimum recycled glass content requirement to January 1, year 2004. And we have in front of us the Dash 5 amendments from the Glass Packaging Institute and also a letter from the Recycling Advocates.
Yes. Mark, are you coming up to... Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, Public Affairs Counsel representing the Glass Packaging Institute. Senate Bill 940 comes here today with three primary amendments that were made in the Senate, two of which I think we have general agreement on, the third we do not. We are continuing to have discussions with the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'll elaborate a little bit more on that. If I could first touch upon the amendments that you do see. Oregon is currently at, as a requirement for 35% recycled content, and on January 1, 2000, we were scheduled to go to 50%. Our neighbor to the south is the only other state that has a recycled content law that I am aware of. They, at one point, also had a 35% going to a 50%. About 4 years ago, they removed the 50% from their statutes. The primary reason why they did so was because the cullet, the broken glass, was not available in order for them to achieve the 50%. So the eight plants in California that do ship some empty containers into Oregon manufacturers range from about 35%, some are close to the 50%. But in our original draft, we were removing the 50% recycled content to match California. In discussions with the Recyclers Association, they felt that the markets might change in the future. They would like to look at it down the road, so we agreed to extend the year 2000 to 2004 and reach agreement on that. There's also the issue of how applicable should this statute be to a manufacturer in Oklahoma or Minnesota who ships a minimal amount of empty containers into Oregon manufacturers. And what we did was come up with, our main concern was that we were dealing with glass manufacturers on the West Coast. So you see the language that you see there that for glass container manufactured in Oregon or within 750 miles of the border. So that covers all manufacturers on the West Coast, but does not deal with manufacturers who send in a minimum amount. I should point out, however, that if you see on lines 5 and 6, every glass container manufacturer in the country still has to report what they're shipping. So DEQ will have that information if, in fact, they believe that the amount being shipped in from a farther eastern point is becoming large. Our primary, the one area, and the Recyclers Association are in agreement with all the contents of the bill, but where DEQ and the Glass Packaging Institute still have disagreement is on lines 21 through 26 and page 2. This sets up, in addition to being able to apply for an exemption for lack of cullet or glass, which is in the statute now, this allows for an applicant to make an application for an exemption based upon not being able to meet the standard because of a technological problem. We have one plant up in Seattle that this amendment is designed to try to deal with. They have two technological problems. As they have five furnaces, four gas, one electric. They put the electric one in to meet air emission standards up in Seattle. That particular furnace primarily produces clear glass. Because of the nature of the electric furnace, they cannot achieve more than a 10 or 11% recycled content, otherwise they burn up the furnace. Making that particular product, which is shipped into Oregon in some volumes to Oregon manufacturers. The second area has to do with what's called dead leaf green glass. It's the Chardonnay bottle. It's that yellow-green. It's very, very difficult chemically to achieve that particular color. 62% of the alcohol...
Can you hold on a second? Yes. You're having some problems. What's that?
I was speaking to the dead leaf green. 62% of the total plant's output is in the dead leaf green. It can achieve about 22% at this point in time recycled content because of the special nature of making that particular glass. So at this point in time, they believe they have a technological impediment to meeting the 35%. This amendment would allow them to come in and request an exemption. DEQ could review it, put conditions on that exemption, could ask that they do X, Y, Z, depending upon what the fact-finding would find out. The difference, I think, between DEQ's position and ours is that DEQ would prefer that there be no process in statute for them to come in and have this discussion, and that they would prefer simply to sit down with the company and try to work that out. Our concern with is they, at that point, would be in violation of the statute, and that's a difficult point to negotiate from. We would prefer that there's a process by which they would go through. We are continuing discussions, Mr. Chair, with DEQ. We have a meeting tomorrow. As you indicated to me, time is running out, and you would like to move this type of legislation. We really have two choices. If you would prefer to give us another day, we could do that. Otherwise, I have prepared Dash 5, which is a very simple amendment changing the 750 miles to 800 miles. And I ask you, Mr. Chair, that so we could, if you move the bill out, we would go back to the Senate. We'd ask the Senate to non-concur, put it in a conference committee as we continued our negotiations. So that's been our promise back to DEQ that we would be willing to continue that effort if you felt you needed to move the bill, and of course the votes were there to do that. So we would, that is a reason for the Dash 5 amendment, so that we would have an amended bill and we could ask the Senate, which they are willing to do, to not concur and then continue the negotiations between the president of the Ball plant in Seattle and ourselves as well as other parties.
Mark, what is the effect of not having this bill and coming out of compliance? Would it be that they would not be able to sell these glass containers into Oregon?
That's correct. And maybe Bob Danko could speak to the enforcement. But these are empty containers that are coming into Oregon being sold to Oregon manufacturers. We, of course, have the Owens plant in Portland. The Owens plant is over 50% recycled content now, primarily because of the bottle bill and recycling in the city of Portland. Now, I should just mention, and another reason why we need to go to the 35% is that the city of Portland is considering co-mingling their glass. Rather, now they support it by each type of color. If that occurs, Owens will drop below, we believe, the 50% because they're not going to be able to get to that level. So that's another reason why the 35% is important. And again, that points to the problem of available color. We have it here in Oregon. California, they don't. A lot of it's going into fiberglass, for example, is using a lot of cullet. and that's what's taking away from the plants.
Any questions from committee members? Representative Decker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, what would be the nature in terms of Section 1, Sub B, what would be the nature of the discussions with DEQ and where a compromise would be found in your estimation?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Deckard, I mean, what we're trying to do is just give the company some assurance that there's a, at least a process where they can come in, where they're not going to be subject to enforcement, and as I think Bob Dankel will tell you, you know, they don't, they're not in the business of putting business out of business. Our concern is that we have two types of products that are being used. Now, perhaps, I mean, and I don't think this is the case, and we've had this discussion, we don't think it's right to say, well, your only option is to change your customers. Okay, to stop making dead leaf green or to stop making the clear glass because it's being made in this particular oven. So those are discussions that we're going to take place tomorrow. We've had trouble putting people together, but so the company's talking to DEQ and saying, look, these are our customers. This is what we're shipping in Oregon. That information has been provided to DEQ. These are the technological kinds of problems that we do have. So that they can ask questions and see if we can identify a process. I think DEQ feels that this is too open. It almost guarantees them the exemption, as opposed to moving them along the path of coming into compliance at 35%. I'm here to say, though, with these two types of products and that electric furnace, if they keep their customer configuration, they can't do it at this point in time, short of changing and throwing away their customers. But that needs to, I think, and that's the reason why we have the president of the company, who's a national president, discussing this with the administration of DEQ. I think we can get to an agreement
tomorrow.
And I think we, yes, I think we can come close, but I'm very cognizant of your time considerations. So.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bob Danko.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Welcome.
I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. I will try to be brief, but I do want to take a minute or two to explain what's going on here. We're opposed to this bill as it is written. And actually, if it passed the way it's written now, and I agree with Mr. Nelson, it won't pass, won't finally be adopted the way it's written now, because I don't think he wants to push it through the way it is now. But if it did pass that way, it would be the first weakening of the recycling laws that were all passed in 1991. And it's interesting because when the Senate considered this measure, it passed 1811, and some of the ayes were, you know, basically voting aye because they assumed it would be fixed in the House. And what you're being asked to do, I guess, is to vote for a bad recycling bill, send it to the floor, have the whole House vote on a bad recycling vote, and then, you know, be recorded on that, and then have it go to a conference committee. I would rather...
I appreciate your willingness to help us understand the politics. I would appreciate if you would talk to the merits of the bill and not the politics of the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chair. Apologize for that. Okay, the merits of the bill. This bill contains an exemption process at the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2 that is specifically designed to exempt a glass plant in Seattle from complying with Oregon's requirements. There's at least a dozen glass plants on the West Coast, the one in British Columbia, one in Mexico, and several in California, and, of course, the one in Oregon. They all comply with our requirements. And the requirements really only pertain to empty glass containers shipped into the state for packaging, so it's a doing business in Oregon concept. There's one glass plant in Seattle that has not made the investments, has not spent the money to use more recycled glass. The other glass plants have made that investment, have made that commitment. The Oregon glass plant, the one that you've probably all seen as you've driven to the Portland airport, it's on the left-hand side of I-205, that glass plant is a leader in the nation on using recycled glass. It exceeds 50% recycled glass use. It's competitive. This glass plant in Seattle is not meeting the standard, and the exemption, the way it is before you today, is specifically written so that glass plant will not have to improve. I don't think that is fair. For one, it puts our Oregon glass plant at a disadvantage. It's interesting, in 1991, the manager of the Oregon glass plant basically wrote, was involved with the discussions, and basically wrote this recycled content standard, recognizing that, yes, it's important to use recycled glass. So we're now facing the situation where all the other glass plants are meeting the requirement, and one glass plant is asking for an exemption. That is okay. From our standpoint, it would be okay if there was going to be incremental progress. And we understand it's, sometimes if you delay and you have to balance economics and markets and so on, that it's going to take time, and we understand that. A schedule for the glass plant to meet so eventually they get to the requirement, sure, that works. But to lock in into statute, allowing a company to stay where it is, far less than the requirement, far less than what everybody else is doing, isn't appropriate. To a couple of the comments that Mr. Nelson made, and we've talked about this at length, talking about the technology exemption for a specific furnace that makes clear glass. That plant up there in Seattle, I've been there, it has five furnaces. Four of the furnaces could use 60% recycled glass to make clear glass. It just so happens the one furnace they use can only use 10% recycled glass. To the dead leaf green issue, that company hardly sells any dead leaf green glass into Oregon, and we're talking about containers into Oregon in an average. So the dead leaf green issue really isn't an issue right now. They're selling very little dead leaf green glass into Oregon. They're selling mostly clear glass, and all the plants on the West Coast far exceed, to make clear glass, far exceed 35%. And there's one final issue involved here, and that's the availability issue. There's already in law that says a glass plant shouldn't be made to meet the standard if the glass isn't available. So that's already there. So if for instance, Owens Brockway can't meet the standard because the glass isn't available to it, that's understandable. I think then it becomes our job to recycle better to produce more glass so then they can use it. So that's already built into law. The fix I would propose, I'm here at the table, but it makes it sound like it's only DEQ has problems with this. Recycling Advocates, a group that supports recycling in the Portland area, Oregon Environmental Council, I believe, Osberg, I believe. So it's not a DEQ versus the Glass Packaging Institute thing. There's other people involved. I handed out a marked up version of the bill because, as Mark said, there's basically three issues here. The first one on line 10 of the bill, the 750-mile limit, we think that's appropriate. That narrows the bill to make it actually more feasible to administer, and we would like one amendment to that says those plants beyond 750 miles have to report to us. Mark says it's already written in the law that everybody has to report. I'm not sure that's appropriate. I think only the plants beyond 750 miles that use a significant amount of glass shipping into Oregon should have to report. Secondly, as we talked about, the technology standard isn't okay. That needs to be fixed, and we need to fix that. Thirdly, on page two, line eight of the bill that moved to 2004, that's okay. That's a good amendment, and we're okay with that. So we're basically down to really the one part, and it really isn't needed in the bill and could be removed today from the bill, and to make a bill pass the House that everybody could vote for, and then we could go fix it as Mark described.
Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Danko, thanks for your time coming down. Just for clarity, you're fine with every part of the bill other than subsection B.
Yeah, with the addition of the reporting for the beyond 750 miles, correct.
further questions.
The rest of the bill is fine, and it's a good bill, and I think the other groups that are concerned about this could say yes, and then everybody be on board.
Another question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dicker.
Thank you. So the issue that we have to grapple with is, and this is just the nature of a legislative session, as you come down to the end, you have to look at keeping things moving to keep the issue viable, and if you have an agreement from the proponents to work with for compromise language, trying to get a sense of, is there a compromise available on subsection B that you think you could work out tomorrow, because then there is a need or incentive to move the legislation along with a dash amendment for non-concurrence.
Mr. Chair, Representative Deckard, I hope we can see eye to eye on it tomorrow. I was hoping that we would have had the discussion, so we would be before you today sitting here together saying we're all on board. That's the way it was supposed to play out. It didn't happen. I get concerned as the bill moves farther along in the process and remains not fixed. And I'm not sure that we can agree tomorrow. I'm confident that we can, because I think we're coming from a rational position, and so is the company. And I think part of the problem is we have just now established the discussions with the Seattle plan itself through its Indiana office instead of weaving through three or four people to get there, and that's very helpful.
And so based on your work and knowledge of this bill, you feel tomorrow, yes, we most likely will be able to work something out that we feel good about and the proponents feel good about?
Most likely, I'm not sure. I'd say I'm very hopeful.
Okay, thanks.
Further questions? Thank you. Doug Myers?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Doug Myers, and I'm here today not representing the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, but I'm representing the Association of Oregon Recyclers. Oregon Recyclers are a group of about 400 companies and individuals, from Weyerhaeuser to people that strongly believe in recycling. And AOR, if I may call the Association of Oregon Recyclers that, AOR is okay with the bill with a few minor tweaks. We support the Dash 5 amendments as a way to get it into a conference committee to further discuss the bill. And with that, I'll just be quiet on the bill.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to testify on Senate Bill 940? We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 940 and open a work session on Senate Bill 940.
Mr. Chairman, it seems like there's a willingness to get together and work this out, so in that effort, I'll move the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 940.
Representative Montgomery moves the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 940.
This is the Dash 5?
Yeah, they don't seem to fix the problem.
Where's the dash point?
They're in your packet.
I didn't want to do these changes, 750 to 800, so they get to
know.
I mean, I have something to disagree
with. I'm not interested in running this bill out with all three additional amendments. I don't know.
Representative Simmons is in here in B, and Representative Witt will be here in room 357.
Are we under a call of the...
You're right. Keep standing at ease right now.
Okay.
Are you okay?
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
Yeah.
Is there any reason why we can't go forward with a conceptual amendment on this bill? Fairly clean conceptual amendments laid out on the DEQ. Okay.
We require a conceptual, something that looks like that.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I didn't mean to interrupt Representative Rasmussen, but the amendment that's before us doesn't seem to fix the problem that has been posed to us, does it? So we would simply be moving forward on this bill without addressing that problem, hoping that it would get fixed.
Mr. Chair.
In a conference committee.
Says the agreement is that it will go non-concurrence in the Senate.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
If this bill is indeed going into non-concurrence, why don't we go ahead and move the conceptual amendments as laid out by DEQ to make sure that those amendments are at least a part of the discussion in the conference committee.
Anything discussed in committee is fair game in a conference committee.
Mr. Chair, this is a strange and marvelous building.
We'll have that noted for the record.
You were asking something, right? Oh, excuse me.
We have a motion.
We have a motion on that.
I guess we're waiting for Representative Wynn.
Further discussion on the motion for the adoption of the Dash 5. Any comments?
Mr. Chairman, we are absolutely committed to continuing this discussion. And I'm hearing what Representative Decker is saying. If DEQ can join me in guaranteeing that the elimination of B does not foreclose the reintroduction of B in conference committee, after we have our discussion, we would be willing, again, we're committed, we'd be willing to do that, so that we do not have people feeling that they're voting for an environmental bill that damaged the recycling bill of Senate Bill 66 in 1991. We do have, having talked to Mr. Danko this morning, I do have a set of amendments that would delete that language. If the committee feels more comfortable doing that, if Mr. Danko is willing to commit, which I think he is, that we will have an open and free discussion in conference committee about the need for some type of process. We'd be willing to do that.
Okay. Further discussion?
I have that instead of amendments, Mr. Chairman, which you do not.
Rosenbaum?
I was just going to ask if this hand in growth still represented the conceptual amendment Mr. Nelson was referring to. But it sounds like it, there's something else.
No, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, yes, they do represent the conceptualized amendment with the exception of Mr. Dankel's comments about whether every glass container manufacturer still has to report. We believe it's absolutely clear, if you read 5 and 6, that every glass container manufacturer still must report. And then in line 10, it says, four glass containers manufactured within 750 miles, you have further requirements. So we still have the full reporting by every glass manufacturer in the country. And that's what DEQ was like. But the amendments that are being handed out reflect the deletion, I believe, and we've just received those from council, of lines 21 through 26. And line 1 on page 2.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. Representative Montgomery.
Just quick, two questions. Mr. Danko, have you seen these?
Mr. Danko, would you please come up?
Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to withdraw my motion on the dash 5s and go to the dash 6s if their heads can both go the same direction. Mr. Chairman, also, all this discussion is going to go to conference committee anyhow. So if it's almost right, I don't see anything wrong with it, but we're taking enough time as it is.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the purposes of moving this and for further discussions, this is okay.
The question, Mr. Manko, is do you feel the elimination of this section precludes its discussion and reintroduction in a conference committee?
No, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Lewis Nelson?
I'm very happy.
Mr. Representative Montgomery?
With the dash 6 amendment, I withdraw my motion on the dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 940.
Representative Montgomery withdraws his motion on the dash 5. Representative Montgomery?
Mr. Chairman, I move the dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 940.
Representative Montgomery moves the dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 940. Discussion? Representative Eckert?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a brief question for Mr. Danko. So now that we will hypothetically have removed Section B, you will bring the same spirit into the meeting tomorrow of how we might be able to compromise if possible in a way that fits DEQ's mission statement.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eckert, you bet.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative King.
For Mr. Nelson, does the sunset in 2003 remain in the bill once amended here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative King, no, there is no sunset. We had a delay on enforcement, which is deleted in lines 13 through 15.
And I stand correct. I think that it was a delay until 2004 for
that's correct. That remains in the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Further discussion? Is there objection to the adoption of the dash 6 amendments?
Much more comfortable with this. Thank you.
Without objection, the dash 6s are adopted. Representative Montgomery?
Chairman, I move Senate Bill 940 as amended to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Representative Montgomery moves Senate Bill 940 to the floor to do pass recommendation as amended. Discussion? Representative King?
I would want to. I'm all in favor of giving a manufacturer a few more years to come into compliance with Oregon's recycling laws, but if they don't want to make investments, I certainly wouldn't be favoring an out-of-state company that didn't want to make investments in recycling over an in-state company that it is. And so I would urge them to come into compliance or decide what business they want to be in.
There's also, Representative King, I'll just note that there's a little thing in the U.S. Constitution called the Interstate Commerce Clause, which this may run into, but we'll save for a different discussion a different day. Representative Witt?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to point out to the employees of these businesses, it doesn't matter if it's an out-of-state employer or an in-state employer. They're Oregon citizens who have jobs in these types of facilities, and we should be doing what we can to protect those jobs responsibly.
Thank you. Please call the roll.
Representative Decker? Aye.
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 Trumbull.
Aye.
Montgomery.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Simmons.
Aye.
Whit.
Aye.
Fairhill.
Aye. Senate Bill 940, moves to the floor with the best recommendation. Representative Rasmussen will carry the bill.
No, I will not. But thank you anyway.
Representative Decker will carry the bill. Open a work session on Senate Bill 404. Chair moves Senate Bill 404 be referred to the Committee on Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs with that recommendation. Discussion?
Which bill was
it? Senate Bill 404, who's in this room?
And some of the rules.
We're moving it to another committee.
Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Decker.
Aye.
King.
Aye.
Trumbull.
Aye.
Montgomery.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Simmons.
Aye.
Whit.
Aye.
Aye. Senate Bill 404 moves to the Committee on Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs. Open a work session on House Bill 3594. Chair moves that House Bill 3594 be moved to the Committee on Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs without recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Whit.
I've been contacted by a lot of constituents and others who have been advocating on behalf of this bill, and I, if it's really the chair's decision to do that, that's fine. I think there is a real need for a public policy discussion relative to insurance and treatment for mental health and other dependency problems, and I would hope that in sending it to this committee that it will get a fair hearing.
Just to respond, Representative Witt, I think the intent is if it's going to have a chance to have that fair hearing, it would be better to have it in Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs than this committee, and the state in the future will, I think this preserves the chance and opportunity. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Witt.
Would it be okay to ask the chairman of the Rules Committee to express his plans on that?
No. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Deckard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say for the record that I, too, have heard probably more about this issue in my 3 years in this body than almost any other issue of just citizens that are concerned about this and have expressed themselves over and over and over again about the need. And so I would join my colleague in supporting, hoping for a hearing and a work session to get this to a vote.
Further discussion? Please call the roll.
Deckard.
Aye.
King.
Aye.
Trumbull.
Aye.
Montgomery.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Simmons.
Aye.
Whit.
Aye.
Fairhill.
Aye. Senator, our House Bill 3594 moves to the Committee on Rules, Elections, and Public Affairs. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1085. Jason, you want to bring us up to speed?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 1085A specifies the scope of the PUC authority to regulate telecommunications joint rates and through service. And we started our hearing on this last time. We didn't finish testimony. And we're going to bring it back today.
We have amendments. Amendments should be before us.
Yes.
AT&T, US West, have you seen the amendments?
Bring it back.
Yes. Dash two amendments.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jenny Lang. I represent U.S. West. I have seen the Dash two amendments, and they reflect what we had discussed with Mr. Lindstrom a week or so ago, and we would support them.
Okay. Proponents? Okay, we have proponents here. Gary? You want to speak for him? Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Gary Bauer with the Oregon Telecommunications Association.
I believe the amendments are satisfactory to the cooperatives. I do not know about AT&T.
Floor around.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you. Is it possible somebody could explain what the effect of these amendments is?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, the bill, let me start with the bill, Senate Bill 1085. The purpose of that is to clarify the scope of authority that the PUC has over a telephone cooperative. Joint rates are basically where you have two or more companies joined together for one and have one single rate. Through service would combine the facilities of one or two or more companies to provide that service. What the bill, purpose of the bill is to primarily set up so that the commission no longer on its own motion would open up an investigation, but a entity could file a complaint with the commission, and they could then look at whatever issue is under that complaint for those two types of joint rates or through services. So the amendments that you have before you just clarify that in addition to customers and telecommunications utilities, that a competitive provider or other type of carrier could also file a complaint.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rasmussen.
Do we have any sense of where the PUC is with this the amendments?
Receiving this communication? They have not signed up previously. If they want to come up, I'm more than happy to them come up and let us know. Otherwise, I'm assuming that if without comment, they're for it or they don't care. Someone want to come up? Yeah. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Byer, maybe you can respond to this. I've had some individuals express a concern that what this bill will do is it will allow the smaller telecommunication companies that control the network to charge almost any fee they want to others that have to use the services of the facilities that are in place, such as an AT&T or an MCI. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, I believe the way this would work would be that if a cooperative, which is a member-owned company, chose to set a rate and for access, in this case, if it's a rate being paid by an inter-exchange carrier, it'd be for access. That carrier has the ability under this legislation to go to the Public Utility Commission and file a complaint over the rate. The commission could then open an investigation on that rate and take action upon it. I believe that is the intent of the change in the bill. The difference between that and the way it is today is the commission could open an investigation on its own motion without waiting for a complaint.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Gary, you're saying that is the only change in the bill from the current law?
My understanding of how this works, and Mr. Chair, I didn't put this together, so that's my reason for explaining this way, is that the purpose, again, primarily changes from the commission doing something on its own motion to someone having to bring the issue to the commission. I do know that the PUC has expressed, for example, you may be asking about EAS. The PUC did express a concern about EAS. My understanding is that a customer or another carrier could still bring an EAS issue to the PUC.
Any further discussion, Representative King?
Does the PUC regulate the rates of telephone co-ops?
Mr. Chair, Representative King, the PUC does not regulate the local rate that a co-op charges its members. It has, in terms of extended area service, EAS, been involved in setting at least the initial rate that a co-op does charge its own members. But normally, a PUC does not get itself involved in the local rate. And that's primarily because the board of the cooperative sets and approves those rates, and those people are elected by the members. They do get involved in setting, they have reviewed access rates. The other way this works is most co-ops are part of what's called a part of a pool in which they jointly go together, and this is where the joint rate issue comes in, and establishes a single rate in which all of those companies charge for access, right, long-distance provider to access the local network. Those revenues are pooled and then redistributed back to the companies based on their cost. That is regulated, and that would continue to be regulated under this.
Further discussion?
Thank you.
Mr. Sessions?
Welcome. Chairman Hill and rest of the Commerce Committee, my name is Tom Lynch from Beaver Creek Telephone. I'd like to clarify Representative Witt's question about us setting any rates as possible. The FCC, under the Telecommunications Act of 1996, as well as the Telecommunications Act of 1934, has set rules and guidelines of separations, how costs are allocated between local EAS and long distance. And part of the responsibilities of a co-op, as well as other small companies, we borrow money through Rural Electric Services, or REA, or RUS now, Rural Utility Services, and the RTB, which is Rural Telephone Bank, and the FFB, which is the Federal Financing Bank. And part of those loan commitments that we have borrowed, it states that we will follow the rules and guidelines of the FCC. And those rules and guidelines have been adopted by the state of Oregon via the Public Utility Commission. If a co-op wanted to violate those rules and guidelines, we would then have to repay our loans, our low-interest loans in which we get from the federal government. And as I feel today with Beaver Creek, we have over $7 million in low-interest loans from the Rural Telephone Bank and the FFB. I really don't think our members, if we do not follow the rules and separations of how we establish our rates from the FCC, I don't feel that our members would be able to repay the $7 million. So there are a lot of rules and guidelines in place today that we do have to follow, and it's part of our loan commitments. It's when we sign those documents, we commit to that. Thank you.
Thank you. And this is just picking up where I left, where was my question a couple days ago to you. I'm wanting to know if the amendments address that concern that I had, which was that Private Carrier X wants to, that the rates are raised on Private Carrier X. What is their recourse? I wasn't satisfied last time that they had enough recourse in the bill because it was the board of directors or six-month process, which to me wasn't the proper recourse. Do the amendments help move, at least for myself, in the right direction of providing a fairer court with the amendments than what was previously in the bill?
Chairman Hill and Representative Dicker, yes, they do. Senate Bill 1085, today we have a statute 759-220, which allows a carrier to file a complaint with the commission that would regulate our rates and set our rates if they found that they were in error. Senate Bill 1085 does not change that. It's still, they have the opportunity to file a complaint with the commission as they do today, just as fast as they do today. But one, and in my comment about where they could address our board of directors, I think that's an added benefit to a carrier, that they can file a complaint with the board of directors or the members finding their issue also. So today they don't have that benefit. In the future, they
do. So, Mr. Chair. Yes. And so how would the amendments be helpful in that respect? I got the sense of the, from at least prior testimony, that they move a step closer in that direction. How do they do that?
Chairman Hill and Representative Decker, they continue to allow anybody that has to pay a rate of a co-op the ability to go to the commission and file a complaint and basically keep complaining that this rate is too high, and we would have to justify that rate to show them why the rate, what it is, and if the commission says, I'm sorry, we don't accept that, they could order us to reduce our rate. That's in place today, and it's in place if this bill was passed and signed.
Thank you. Representative Montgomery?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me see if I understand this. A couple of days ago, we had a hearing on Senate Bill 1085, engrossed, A engrossed. There's a couple of people who weren't happy about it. Now we have amendments, and it appears everybody's happy. Is that correct? Now why don't we move on, Mr. Chairman? We're in work session.
Yeah,
I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1085.
Representative Montgomery moves the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1085. Discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only question is that in a fax that I just received, it says that AT&T and U.S. West is in support with the amendments. And I'm just curious about that, and I noticed there isn't a... we heard from U.S. West, however, AT&T, so it's being represented that AT&T's okay with the amendments. Is that...
They're not here. John, you speak for him?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Powell, representing AT&T. And, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this bill was not part of the jurisdiction of my contract with AT&T. And I did substitute for Laura in the House on this issue. She had an appointment she had to leave for. It's the only reason she wasn't here. And she told me this is a work session, so there would be no testimony. Thanks, Laura. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, just for the record, I think it is the position of AT&T that this bill is not necessary and that I think they continue to have concerns about the bill.
Mr. Chairman,
has she been privileged to the dash two amendments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Montgomery, I do believe she has seen amendments.
Further discussion?
On the amendment?
On the motion to adopt the amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Rosenbaum?
I'm opposed to the motion. I guess it's unclear to me where everybody is on this bill, but what does seem clear is that we're taking away some ability to regulate that I'm not confident in doing. And so for the sake of the customers, more than the carriers, I am uncomfortable with sending this out right now.
Further discussion? Mm-hmm. Ms. Colerole?
Representative Bender?
Aye.
Do they?
Yang?
Okay. Okay. That was an aye.
Colerole?
Aye.
Montgomery?
Aye.
Rasmussen?
Aye.
Rosenbaum?
No.
Simmons?
Rick?
No.
Chair
Hill? Aye. The dash two amendments are adopted. Further rule of the committee?
Actually, I'm still uncomfortable with the bill itself, but...
Mr. Chairman, I'll move Senate Bill 1085 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation, but I don't have to carry it.
I'm not sure that's acceptable.
Representative Montgomery moves Senate Bill 1085 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not satisfied that this bill protects other businesses that need to use the system that's in place for telecommunications sales. I don't think this bill is a classic regulation, deregulation bill. On the contrary, I think what we're trying to do is make sure that there is fair and open and competitive access for companies like MCI, AT&T, and other companies that need to use a telecommunications carrier's system, infrastructure that's in place. And I'm not satisfied at this point that this bill does that, and because of that, I'll have to vote against it because I see it potentially as having an anti-competitive impact.
Further discussion? Representative Crummell?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share some of Representative Witt's same concerns, and I'm concerned that it's not getting to the true root of the problem, and for that reason, I'm going to oppose it as well.
I still search for a compelling reason.
Representative
Representative Decker? Your hand right now.
I'm not.
Okay. Representative Montgomery, I would suggest to withdraw your motion.
Of course. I kind of want to carry the damn
thing. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 1085. We will briefly open the work session on Senate Bill 1149 just to say we have still, there are amendments still out. There are amendments at your place. We will not be taking any testimony on the amendments today. We await further amendments from Legislative Council.
With all respect, Mr. Chairman, which amendments are you talking about? Now, I'm a dash 28. Am I current?
There's a dash 28, and then attached to that are a series of amendments behind that in numerical order.
Yeah, I have that.
So to bring you up to speed, at our next meeting, we'll have a cheat sheet looking at ownership of the amendment Jason could put together. And we'll figure out whose amendments are whose, and we'll mess up all of them. So with that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 1149. And without objection, we are adjourned.